This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
Let's turn to Titus tonight. We were in Titus not long ago on a Sunday night as we began studying some of the responsibilities or roles of the pastor. We've looked at qualifications of the pastor and spent some time there. And then we started to look at, well, what is it that a pastor is supposed to do? That's something we ought to know from the Bible, isn't it? Not just tradition or what we've seen pastors do, but what does God say a pastor ought to do? In Titus chapter 1, we were launched into this idea that pastors have a big job to promote and protect sound doctrine or the Word of God or the Gospel or the truth. That's a big theme throughout the New Testament, and we kind of got our launch point from Titus chapter 1. I want us to come to Titus chapter 2 tonight. And it will lead us into a study of another very important job that a pastor has to or should be fulfilling. Titus chapter 2, verse 1, it's interesting because it says, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine." So there we are again talking about promoting and protecting the truth, the true gospel. But I want us to move on past that, if we could, please, and come down to verse 7. Because verses 2 through 6 are specific things that the pastor is supposed to be teaching. So Titus is a letter that Paul wrote to Titus to instruct him and to tell him what to tell others. And so we're looking especially at the instructions to Titus, not so much at the things that Titus was supposed to pass on. But there's categories here. Tell the young men to do this. Tell the older men to do this. Tell the ladies to do that. But let's come to verse 7, where again Paul is addressing Titus and telling him something that he should be doing. Titus 2:7. "In all things, showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you." There's some key words here. What I want us to start on is the word pattern. The word pattern. Brother Cantway and Brother Baggage are sitting one in front of another over here. And I was thinking about you as we studied this. Because you know what the word pattern means if you look it up? It's a die or a stamp. As former tool makers, I thought you might appreciate that. Paul tells Titus that he's supposed to be like a die or a pattern or a stamp that's used to imprint a shape on something else. He's supposed to be a pattern. When I first read pattern, one of the first things I think of, I don't know why, but I think of when you could go to like Walmart or Joann Fabrics and they would have these huge shelves with the sewing patterns. And I never really understood them. It's like you take out this envelope and there's all these papers and papers and papers and somehow they turn into clothes. I don't know how it works, but that's a pattern. In any case, we understand that a die or a stamp or a pattern is something that it shows you how something else is supposed to be. An example is another word. Sometimes in the New Testament, it's translated ensample. Same idea. So the responsibility of the pastor we're considering tonight is that the pastor is to exemplify Christian living. He is to be an example or a pattern or a roadmap of Christian living. We'll group this into three or four thoughts, I suppose, specifically why or how the pastor is supposed to do this. I don't think it will be too heavy or too lengthy, but then I've been wrong before. The special thing about this particular text when it says that Titus should be an example or a pattern is who is going to be looking at the pattern. It's not always this way in other places that encourage the pastor to be an example. So look at these verses again and see who's going to be looking at this pattern. Titus 2, 7 and 8. In all things, showing thyself a pattern of good works. In doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned. That he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. Who's looking at the pattern in this occasion? Is it the other young pastors on the island of Crete? Is it the believers in the church? It's he that is of the contrary part. Those that don't believe. And it's interesting that Paul kind of weaves back and forth between, hey, you need to be a pattern of good works. Good works are things that you do, right? It's observable behavior. But then he throws in there this section about doctrine and sound speech. So he says, Titus, you need to have good doctrine, and he describes it, and you need to have sound speech. And before and after that, he says, you need to show a pattern of good works so that those that are of the contrary part don't have anything evil to say. So if I were to kind of bring all those ideas together around one sentence, it would be to say that matching good works and sound speech are an important testimony to unbelievers. If a pastor teaches the truth, doesn't live like it, how are the unsaved people going to think about that? Let's say that you invite a neighbor to come spend some time with you and your pastor, and you're hoping for a gospel opportunity, and your neighbor says, wait a minute, when they get there to the table or the whatever you're doing, he says, wait, I've met your pastor before. In fact, I waited on him in the store where I work. He was a jerk. Thanks, but no thanks. It wouldn't go too well, would it? That's a pattern of bad works. And no matter how sound his speech may be, no matter how orthodox his doctrine may be, if his life doesn't match the message, the unbelievers will not want to come to Christ. Now that's true for all of us, but if possible, even more so for someone who is a pastor, elder, bishop. Good doctrine alone is not sufficient. If a man would be a pastor, he needs to live in an example of the things that he's saying.
Who shall I call on next? I need a helper.
I do.
We gotta get some props here. I'll be right back.
You volunteered and you don't know what the props are. Could be painful. Never know. Never know. Ellie, I don't know if you've been up before. Would you like to come up here? You want to go for it? Come on, I don't think it will hurt at all. All right, you want to slowly up the platform? Good. One more? Okay, all right, this is Ellie for all. And I have some things behind my back. Are you ready? You want to see them? You want to guess what they are first, just for fun? What do you think is behind my back? Oh, never let you lose the count back. Anyone guess? You give up? No?
Why don't you start right now? I'll be good for you. Why don't you open up your water bottle and take a drink right now?
I'm not going to. I mean, I don't know. Could you put out a drink of water? Oh, was it stop? Do you need help? Can I help you? So, good job. She's drinking her water. She's drinking the whole thing? Can't think of that. Great. Take a breath. Wow, that's good. Now, I don't want to drink any water, but I'm glad that you are. That looks like a lot of work. Did you hear us? Ah, I like your bottle. I do all the things over there. That's good. You just take the pain. That's awesome. You going to finish it? You think you can?
Matching good works and sound speech are an important testimony to unbelievers. And as silly as it would be to say, okay, you should drink water, but me, I'm just going to have Red Bull all the time. How much worse is it for a pastor to say, this is how you should live, but I'm not going to live that way? Paul said, Titus, you need to show yourself a pattern of good works. Come now to 1 Timothy, just a little bit before, maybe a page or two for you. 1 Timothy chapter 4, we're going to see another passage where young pastors are told to be examples. This one's maybe more familiar to some of us. 1 Timothy 4, verse 12, and we're actually going to follow this up with a whole bunch of one-versers. They're not one-liners, they're one-versers, but they all kind of say the same thing. 1 Timothy 4:12. Paul says, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example. Guess what that word is? A die or a stamp. Actually, in the Greek word, it's like tupas, like Michelle Tupas in our church. So if you ever aren't sure what that word is, just remember Mrs. Tupas. And that's the word here for example. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers. In word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Now, how is 1 Timothy 4:12 different from Titus 2:7 and 8? one big obvious difference. Who's Timothy being an example to? Be thou an example of the believers. So in Titus, Paul said you need to be an example to those that are of the contrary part. But he also says you need to be an example to those that are believers. And in Timothy, he lists some specific areas, doesn't he? So let's take a minute. I don't think they're real confusing, but it says that you need to be an example of the believers in word. That's the things that you say. Pastors need to watch their tongues. It's important that a pastor practice self-control with his words. A lot of pastors talk a lot, more than is comfortable sometimes. It's part of our responsibility as we warn and admonish and exhort and explain. It takes words to do that. But it's so easy to use the wrong words and to sin with your tongue. But Paul says you need to be an example in your words and in your conversation. Now, conversation here doesn't mean like your dialogue. Conversation in this Old English just means the way you live, your general way of life. That's to be an example also. And that one is maybe even harder than being an example in word, because it's kind of all encompassing. Your whole life should be an example. If you're looking for a new church, if you are, in the military and you move every 4 years and you're constantly having to find a new church, or if, young men, you are considering heading into the ministry, or if in whatever year the Lord puts a pulpit committee together to look for a church pastor here, one of the things you need to look for is someone that you can say, that man's an example, just in his general way of living. It shouldn't be the kind of thing where I wouldn't want to live. That's not the way we want you to do it. Parents, you don't want to become members at a church where you have to tell your children, now the pastor has a lot of good things to say, but we don't want to follow his example in that area, because in that area he's really, really out there. He's supposed to be an example in his conversation, his whole life. He's also to be a conversation in charity. He should be exemplary in his love. If a pastor's not loving, I don't care how much he has devotions from the original Hebrew. If he doesn't have love, it's a tinkling cymbal, right? He's supposed to be an example in charity. He's supposed to be an example in spirit, his heart or his attitude. If a pastor has a negative, sour, critical, harsh spirit, that's not right. Now, these are not the qualifications. And often when we look at potential pastoral candidates, we'll say, okay, does he meet the qualifications in 1 Timothy? And we forget that he's supposed to be an example in these areas. It's not listed as a qualification, but it's a command given to the young pastor to be an example in his spirit, as well as his faith. And that's not talking so much about his creed as it is his faithfulness. The pastor is to be consistent. The pastor is to be, he's supposed to do the work that's given to him. He's not supposed to be on again, off again. He's supposed to consistently do the work that's set before him. And in purity. And here it has the connotation of chastity, that kind of purity. And how the cause of Christ has been hurt by pastors who weren't examples of chastity. This is very, very important. But notice that this is an example for the believers. What's the phrase we kind of haven't talked about yet at the beginning of the sentence? Let no man despise that youth. We don't know exactly how old Timothy was, or Titus, but Timothy was considered young in his culture. And in a culture like that, they are typically going to be looking to the elders to be the examples. Look at Elder so-and-so to show you the way. Look at the old person, the gray-haired one, the generation of grandparents or whatever. Let them be your example. But here, Paul says, Timothy, it doesn't matter how young you are. It doesn't matter how much the culture may look down on you because you don't have some cultural status. You need to be an example anyways. And let me say this to all of our young people. That would be all of you, right? Do you all feel young tonight? If you are by any definition young, you can and should be an example. There's nothing in God's Word that says, oh, well, when you're a teenager, you ought to just plan on, a stage of rebellion. There's nothing that says that, you know, young adults, they've just got to sow their wild oats, and you kind of expect them to run wild for a while, and hopefully they come back. As a young man, Timothy was exhorted to be an example. So whether you're a child, a young teenager, a young adult, a young couple, whatever kind of young you are, you can be exemplary. And you should be. It shouldn't be that, well, I don't really have to live up to this standard of righteousness. That's just for the old fogies who got nothing better to do with their life. No, exemplary behavior, regardless of what the culture says, should be engaged by all of God's people, particularly and especially someone who's going to wear the badge of pastor. We sometimes hear that phrase or expression, no, he's wise beyond his years. That's kind of a variation of what Paul is saying to Timothy. You ought to be an example. You ought to be wise beyond the years that you've lived. And where does that wisdom come from? It comes from the Lord. When I think of someone who practiced this, the example that quickly comes to mind is young David. I like young David better than old David. How about you? 1 Samuel 18. Let's turn to that, please. 1 Samuel 18 for an example of someone that was an example, even though he was young. 1 Samuel 18. David and Goliath is chapter 17. So David's already been anointed, but he's still kind of looked down on by his older brothers. It's not public knowledge that he's going to be king. In fact, it'll be decades yet before he's king. There's just a lot yet to happen. But David gets some notoriety when he kills Goliath and he shows himself mighty in battle. 1 Samuel chapter 18, let's start right at the beginning. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would let him go no more to home to his father's house. In other words, come, stay with us here in the palace. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war. Remember his brothers, how they responded when he showed up at the battle? Where are those few sheep? And now Saul is setting him over the men of war. And he was accepted in the sight of the people, even though he was young, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Verse 14, please. And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him, because Saul was insecure. And then come down to verse 30. Then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass, after they went forth, that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by. David was relatively young. We don't know how many years old he was, but he was relatively young. And yet he was an example. He behaved himself wisely all the time, even when King Saul said, go do this, go do that, play the harp, catch my spear, whatever. He behaved himself wisely. And insecure leaders became afraid of him. They could see God's hand is upon this young man. He's going to use him. And likewise, the common people accepted him. Saul's servants respected him. And it came to the point that his name was much set by. Do you know what that means? Wow. Okay, listen. Son, when you grow up, there goes David. He's a shepherd, but now he's like a leader in Saul's army. You want to follow his example, son. David is a good man to follow. His name was set by. If you'd be a pastor, that's the kind of life you're asked to live in 1 Timothy. Why is it so important that a pastor be an example to the believers? Ponder that while we read a few other verses that say the same thing. 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. And at the end of the next four verses or so, I'm going to need help again up front. 1 Peter chapter 5, a wonderful passage on being an elder. We looked at it briefly at the beginning of the series. 1 Peter chapter 5, We'll just break right in for sake of time and focus. 1 Peter 5:3, Peter, addressing these other elders, says, "Neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock." Being ensamples to the flock. The elders are supposed to be examples or patterns to the flock. Back to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. This is not Paul telling a young pastor what to do. This is not Peter telling elders what to do. This is Paul testifying about his own ministry. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. 1 Corinthians 11, 1. Paul spoke of himself and said, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ." And then the book of Philippians, please. Philippians chapter 3, first of all. Philippians 3, 17. Philippians 3, 17. "Brethren, be followers together of me, and mark or notice or pay attention to them which walk so as ye have us for an ensample." There's our word again. So 1 Corinthians 11:1, he says, "Be followers of me." Philippians 3:17, he says, "Be followers together of me and others that you have for an example." And then just the next chapter, Philippians 4:9, he says, "Those things which ye have both learned and received," watch this, "and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you." He didn't say to the Philippian believers, "Those things that you heard me say, do those, and pay no attention to my own life and example." He says, pay attention to what I've said, but also pay attention to what you've seen me do and the things you've heard me say. He was an example. It's important for pastors to be an example. Have you thought about why? Why over and over again does Paul say, "Follow me because I am following Christ"? Why does he tell Timothy and Titus that you need to be an example? And to Timothy specifically, you need to be an example to the Christians. Why does Peter tell the elders that they need to be examples to the flock? All right, who's my volunteer?
I think I saw Allison first. Come on, Allison.
Wait, it depends. I'm not sure if you can do this last season. Come on, Allison. Oh, sorry. I thought this might happen a little bit. It's nothing against you. Well, yeah, because then you went taller than me. That's okay. That's not a problem. Thanks anyway. Let's see. Maybe Dylan can do it. What do you think? Dylan, what do you have? Come on down. We'll get you on the side, Holly, for you. All right, Dylan. You okay?
Yep.
Excellent. All right. So here's what we're going to do. I need some help. Do you think you can teach me something?
Sure.
Okay. So here's what I need your help with. You see, before I came to church today, I had Mrs. Adams to tie my shoes for me. Because nobody else knows this, but I don't know how to tie my shoes. Let's pretend that I don't know how to tie my shoes. Okay? So I would like you to tell me how to do it.
Okay.
Alright, I'm going to tie my shoes.
Okay, first things first, you cross.
Just tell me. Okay, so please, just don't touch my shoes.
Okay. Okay.
Alright. Age you kids want to learn to do this? Is that like a second grade thing? I forget.
K-5.
Five? I guess that's a little slow. I don't remember. Okay. All right. So we've gone four ladies. Good.
Then you grab this one around this one.
Okay. Like that?
Yes.
All right.
And then you take the two of them, then you pull them.
Okay. Like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Then you make a loop out of one of them.
Okay.
Oh. You can pull that on this hand.
Okay. Like if you untied your shoe and we did it together?
Yeah.
Why don't we try that?
Alright.
Okay, you untie your shoe, and I'll untie mine, and we'll start. Alright. Good. Alright. Got to feel double knot. Okay, we got it. Alright.
Okay.
I'm gonna sit right here.
So
the order
to make it tiny cold.
Alright.
For the first time.
Yep.
Cross.
Yep. Got it. Okay, wait, slow down, pull down, under, and pull, like that, okay.
Then you do this,
okay. Is this the part where the rabbit goes around and goes?
Actually, take one of the pieces
away from you. Mm-hmm. Yep, pull it together, okay, got it.
Then you wrap this one
around it.
Point of that. When Dylan was trying to tell me what to do, but didn't show me what to do, was I learning very well?
No.
But when he showed me what I should do, I mean, I messed up here and there, but I got it. Is Christian living about, is it something you can just be told what to do? Or do you need to see somebody doing it? So Paul told Timothy, be an example to the believers. He told Titus, be an example because there are unbelievers watching. But he told Timothy, you better be an example to the believers. Living the Christian life is not just checking a box to a doctrinal statement saying, I believe this and now you're done. It's something that's lived, that's carried out, that's performed day by day by day. And if I'm just told, okay, you need to be patient. I'm told, okay, you need to approve things that are excellent. Okay, you need to love your neighbor. I'm beginning to scratch my head and say, I'm confused. What does that look like? But if I can look and see somebody, whether it's a parent or a teacher or a pastor, that says, follow me as I follow Christ. This is how you tie your shoe. You take it. And you do, and then this. Then there's a lot more life of it that I'm going to catch the faith, isn't there? The Christian life is a skill to be learned, not just a set of information to be memorized. And so pastors are told to be an example to the believers so that they can teach them what they should do. I don't know about you, but I especially like those two times where Paul said, follow me as I follow. Isn't there a special sense of kinship that's there? He says, hey, come on, I'm following Christ. You come too, right?
It's not as if Paul is sitting on the sidelines saying, hey, you guys, go follow Jesus. I'm tired. It was neat for me to see at our 5K a couple weeks ago, both of our cross-country coaches running alongside with their students, being an example to them, saying, hey, come on, we can do this. They were showing them the way, not just telling them what to do. Run faster, try harder, don't give up. Okay, there's a time for a coach to do that, but there's also a time for a coach to say, come on, let's do this together. And when Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ, he says, we're in this together. I'm not on some different level from you. I'm trying to live the Christian life, the same Christian life you need to try to live. And I'm following Christ, follow me too. I want to be an example. So the pastor is to exemplify Christian living. It's absolutely vital. It doesn't matter how smart he is, how many degrees he has. It doesn't matter how long he's been doing it. If he's not an example of Christian character, he's not a good pastor. Now, clearly, there are none of us that are perfect. But you can be an example without being perfect. He's to be an example for the unbeliever, matching his good teaching with his good works. He's to be an example to the believer, to help show him how to live the Christian life. Second Thessalonians 3. 2 Thessalonians 3. A little longer passage here. It's another aspect of why and how the pastor needs to be an example. The issue that is addressed in these verses must have been a serious one because it's referenced in both 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians. Kind of like there's some things mentioned in 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. So they needed to continue working on it. Do any of us have to keep working on things? Yeah, so 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, a lot about the second coming and looking forward to Jesus coming again. Let's start reading in verse 7 of chapter 3, 2 Thessalonians 3, 7. For yourselves know how ye ought to, there it is, follow us. For we behaved not ourselves disorderly among you. The word disorderly is like the idea of being out of step, being out of sync, not doing properly what you should do. He says, we don't behave ourselves disorderly among you. Neither did we eat any man's bread for naught or for nothing. But we wrought or we worked with labor and travail night and day that we might not be chargeable to any of you. Not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an ensample unto you to follow us. What's he talking about? Well, he said, you need to follow us. He says, we weren't disorderly. And he said, we didn't eat food for nothing. We worked. And we didn't want to be chargeable or we didn't want to owe anything to anybody. He said, and we didn't do that because we didn't have the right or the power to eat food without working day and night. But he said, we did it to make ourselves an ensample for you to follow. Verse 10. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, saying that if any would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Well, Paul is a missionary. He's traveling, sharing the gospel, planting churches. And he says, you know, Thessalonians, when I was there, you saw what I did. I didn't just, you know, teach for a while and then knock off early. Or I didn't, like, just sleep all day while you guys were working your jobs. And then we had some Bible studies at night. He says, I worked day and night. You saw I was diligent. And I'm telling you that you need to be diligent. And I told you when I was there. And I think I told you in my first letter as well that you need to be working hard. He said, if any doesn't want to work, he shouldn't eat. A little social commentary there. Right? Bethany went through the drive-thru at McDonald's a week or so ago. They had a sign, please be nice to our employees. At least they came to work today. Right? There's a lot of restaurants struggling to do a good job because there's a lot of people don't want to come to work.
Right? And the Bible speaks pretty directly to that. It's a little cultural commentary there. Paul said, if you're not going to work, you shouldn't eat. And he didn't just say it, did he? He showed it. Now, numbers of places in the New Testament, Paul argues that as an apostle and as a minister of the word, he had the authority to be ministered to by the people that he's ministering to. And he says, if I ministered spiritual things to you, it's not really a big deal if you minister carnal or earthly or material things to me. He says, the laborer is worthy of his hire, just like the ox that treads out the corn deserves to get to munch on some corn once in a while. If you're working, you should be fed. And he said, the priests in the Old Testament, they sacrificed the animals and they got to eat of the animals. Their work supported their spiritual work supported their physical needs. So Paul argues that left and right. But he says, when I was with you in Thessalonica, I didn't let you take care of my needs. I could have, but I didn't. And here's why. I wanted to be an example to you. I wanted to show you that you shouldn't be disorderly. You shouldn't be a busybody. You shouldn't go around talking all the time and just hope that the Lord's going to come back. And so you don't have to put any effort into feeding yourself. I wanted to show you the right way. The pastor should exemplify diligence to believers who have to labor for their sustenance and occupy their time wisely. As I was reviewing this and pondering it, and I read that last verse, 11. We hear that there be some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. And I thought, oh me, does that describe some pastors? Are there some pastors that seem to have all the time in the world to do whatever? Are there some pastors that are busybodies and in the name of fellowship and of keeping up with the brethren, they get together with pastors and gossip about how bad their staff and members are? I'm afraid to say it's probably true. How unseemly for a pastor not to be an example of diligence to his people. But in a more general sense, it's not just labor that's at stake here. The point is, Paul had every right, if a Christian ever has any rights, Paul had every right to not make tents. But he chose to do it anyways, so that it would help his people learn.
Amen.
And the pastor needs to be willing to forgo his liberty for the edification and the example of the flock. A pastor's mindset should never be, well, I don't have to. Well, it's my right. Well, they can't infringe upon my liberty. A pastor should be willing to give up his liberty for the edification of the flock. Think about your favorite subject in school. Okay, y'all thinking about it? Right? Let's all say it together. Math. Math. I thought that was going to be unanimous. Brother, I don't know what's wrong. That's right, I got Brother Furlong on my side. All right, so think about your math classes. One of the things that my math teachers always told me and that I always told my math students was, show... Yeah, very good. You had the same math teacher I did. How about that? Show your work. All right, so picture, we got a lot of teachers here tonight. Let's, there's a song. She got a nursery. That's great. Good. So there's this song. She's teaching third grade math. What's the concept they've done recently? Did you do subtraction with bar weight or anything exciting like that?
Multiplication with carrying.
Multiplication with carrying. All right, so... do you expect your students to show their work?
Absolutely.
Do they have to like put little superscript numbers up there and all that kind of thing? Alright, so multiplication and comparing. So like would that be like 23 times 11? Would that involve multiplication? No?
254 times 4.
254 times 4. Okay, so single digit down below. 254 times 4, but you're gonna have to okay. So do you think that Ms. Stallcup can do math problems in her class without showing all her steps and work? Do you think she can do some of them, like, probably in her head? I think probably she can. I think Ms. Stallcup is very smart. I think she can do third grade math in her head. So,
Can you see Ms. Salkup over there in the classroom tomorrow morning in math class?
Just to say math class makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Anyway, so she's in math class, and she's like, all right, boys and girls, I need to make sure that you're showing your work and doing every step. Now, the answer is, 394.
How did you do that? Why do it in my head?
But you can't.
Well, if you can do it in your head, why can't we do it in our head?
Because I'm the teacher. How does that go? Right? If she is wanting them to correctly do the math problem, and they're just learning it, they probably need to show their work on every little step, even if they don't think they need to. And so she is going to limit her liberty. She is going to put a cap on her mental prowess. And she's going to act like a third grader, and she's going to make all those superscripts and the crosswords and whatever else she has to do in her steps
to help them do the things that they need to do.
And I can tell you, a math teacher that's not willing to do that concerns me. If a math teacher's like, hey guys, check this out, I can do it in my head. That's why you're the teacher. I'm the student. Help me out. Show me how. Well, I don't have to. I've already learned this. Well, yeah, but I haven't. And if you don't help me, I'm going to have my mommy call your boss. That's a pretty standard response. If a math teacher should show her work for the sake of the students learning, shouldn't a pastor be willing to limit his liberty so that people can have a good example? It's not about what do I have a right to do. Well, my conscience doesn't condemn me. Yeah, but if you're going to cause a weaker brother to fall, cut it out. 2 Thessalonians 3. The pastor should exemplify diligence and be willing to limit his liberty so as to teach the people. And since you're learning so quickly, we are going to have time for this last one. I wasn't sure if we would. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, and we'll be done. We're learning that pastors should be an example in general in all the areas of living. They should match their living with their doctrine so that unbelievers don't blaspheme. Whenever I'm studying topics like this, I don't know why I do this to myself. I guess it's to increase my blood pressure or give me motivation, but I'll sometimes take a few minutes to review videos of false teachers. You know, and one of the more famous false teachers said, I didn't know this. This false teacher has his own private jet, estimated value of $90 million just for the airplane. Like, wow. I mean, I thought his house was overly expensive, but now his house is really a pretty good deal, you know, compared to the $90 million airplane. It was really nice. And we make fun and we scoff, but the real tragedy in all of it is you can watch a 60-minute news show or an ABC expose on a whole list of these false teachers. And you listen to the interviewer, and the interviewer knows that the guy's a fake. And I don't know if the interviewer is a Christian or not. But if I were an unsaved, liberal-leaning, humanistic journalist, and I got to spend time sitting across the platform with some of these people that preach prosperity gospel and fake all kinds of things so they can get poor people to send them money. I think it made it a little harder for me to come to Christ. And that's why Paul told Titus, you need to make sure that you have good works to match your sound speech. Then, for the believers, we know that living the Christian life is hard. It's complicated. There's a lot of steps. And so we need a pastor that's going to show us how to do it, not just tell us what to do. A pastor that's willing to limit his rights so that we can not be tempted to wrong living. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 1. We then, as workers together with him, there's multiple chapters here that are primarily about the ministry, and we'll look at them probably later in the series, but Paul says, we're workers with God. We beseech you also that you receive not the grace of God in vain. Verse 3, giving no offense in anything, that the ministry be not blamed, but in all things approving ourselves as the ministers of God, in much patience, in afflictions, in necessities, in distresses. And he goes on and on and on, talking about all the hard things that he goes through. But let's put together the key phrases that help us get the thought, the big idea. Verse 1, he says, we as workers together with God. We as workers, verse 3, give no offense in anything. Verse 4, but we approve ourselves as the ministers of God. The pastor, in this case, Paul the missionary, traveling pastor, church planter, he says, I don't want to give an offense at anything. I don't want to do anything so that the ministry be not blamed. When I think about those false teachers that you can find all kinds of exposés on, they cause the ministry to be blamed, don't they? They cause the name of Christ itself to suffer. And it is awful that many times desperate people who don't really have money are giving money to them anyways. That's bad. It's bad that they're playing on the emotions of people. Sometimes people that are really, really sick. But it is even worse. It is unconscionable. It is evil that they would use the name of Christ to do it. Paul said, as ministers, we don't give offense in anything so that the ministry be not blamed. Some of you know I've been meeting with town officials and most recently county officials about our traffic situation and crosswalk and things like that. And if you've ever worked with government to get permits or to get, you know, things happening, you know that it takes a long time. And sometimes the reasons that are given in opposing to your idea are a little frustrating. You need to pray for me that when I'm talking to town council or county officials, that I don't give offense over our traffic situation, causing the name of Christ and his ministry to be blamed. It would be better that we never get the crosswalk we want, or we never get the striping we want. It'd be better that we never get any of that than that I make a jerk of myself in front of them and say, oh yeah, typical pastor. I knew eventually he'd just start yelling and trying to get his way. When someone who names the name of Christ, and even more so someone who's a leader of Christians, a pastor, when they react wrong in a situation, that blames the ministry. Paul then talks about all these hard things in much patience, afflictions, and necessities, and distresses. It might be easy for a pastor to act like a pastor when everything's going well. But when every other meeting, the verdict that's given is different, and it's testing your patience, it's a little easier to do something that blames the ministry. So I would learn from this that pastor needs to handle all things, and especially the difficulties of life, in such a way that it makes God look good. When things don't go your way, when things are uncomfortable, when you're a victim of some circumstance, the pastor needs to not give offense in anything so that the ministry isn't blamed. Well, variations on a theme. The theme is that the pastor is not only supposed to protect and promote good doctrine, the pastor is supposed to exemplify Christian living. And that is a very tall order.
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. Grace, Glory, the number 7, at juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.